Hi everybody, I'm Pinakin Munshi and we are covering the legal aspects in supply chain management. Today we are going to cover chapter 7, which is sale of goods and contracts. What we are going to cover under this chapter, the Sale of Goods Act 1930, characteristics of a contract to sale, performance of the contract, transfer of property, rights and duties of buyers and sellers, breach of contract, FOR, CNF and CIF contracts. So the Sale of Goods Act 1930, contract of sale of goods is a contract whereby the seller transfers or agrees to transfer the property in goods to the buyer for a price. Very simply put, sale is wherever you are transferring goods of a certain quality, what we term here as the property in goods, for a consideration, which generally is for a price, which is a monetary consideration. Sale and agreement to sale, we'll look at what is the difference between these two. So the sale, seller transfers the property in goods to a buyer for a price, and the contract for sale may be absolute or conditional. Whereas an agreement to sell is transfer of property takes place in future subject to some conditions. And it's an agreement to sale, it becomes a sale only when time elapses and conditions are fulfilled. So let's look at the difference here. So in a sale, the transaction has already happened. The transfer of ownership of the goods has already happened, and the price may have been paid or may be paid as part of the conditions of the contract. Whereas in an agreement to sale, it's an agreement of a party to sell and the other party to purchase. So the sale may not have actually happened. This sale is to happen in future. So this is the basic difference between the sale and agreement to sale. We'll also look at the difference between sale and hire purchase agreement. So in sale, the property is transferred immediately, and when the sale is being made, the taxes and levies, they are charged on the material. The buyer cannot terminate the contract and cannot return the goods in case of a sale. Whereas in hire purchase agreement, the property is transferred after the buyer pays the last installment. So the buyer can terminate the contract and return the goods before the final sale. So essentially, what is the difference? In the sale, the transfer of ownership happens right at the beginning of the process. And as I said, the payment can maybe come later, but all taxes, all levies, everything is charged and the invoice is raised on the buyer. Whereas in hire purchase, you are treating the supply of material as a hire. So let us say some goods or some equipment which has been given on hire purchase, it's treated like as if it is hired, and only when the last installment has been paid, that is when all the taxes are charged and the ownership of the goods is transferred after the payment of the last installment. This is one fundamental difference between sale and hire purchase agreement. So let's look at the characteristics of a contract for sale. So in a contract for sale, the seller agrees to transfer the goods to the buyer for a price. The contract of sale may be absolute or conditional. Absolute is where, against payment, the ownership of the goods is transferred. Conditional may be where, subject to fulfillment of certain conditions, the sale is completed or the transfer of ownership happens only after completion of these conditions. The tax is levied at the time of the contract of, in case of a sale, and if the buyer becomes insolvent, the seller cannot recover the goods from the official assignee or the official receiver. That means once the sale has been made, completed, and assume that the payment remains to be made and the party becomes insolvent. So in that case, the buyer will have to wait for the official dissolution of the company and then recover his dues. He cannot recover the goods, stating that they have not been paid for. So in a sale where the payment is made by the buyer in installment, the installments paid by the buyer are regarded as part payment made by the buyer towards the price of the goods. That means the sale has already happened and only the payments are being made in part, but the sale is the transfer of goods or ownership of the goods has already been completed. There are terms and conditions and warranties in a contract of sale which have to be followed by both. They are implied conditions and there are implied warranties also. We will see what those are as we go ahead. So looking at the implied conditions of contract. So in case of an agreement of sale, the seller has the right to sell the goods at the time of actual sale. To give you an example, in international trade, many a times we place an order, which is basically a agreement of sale for future date. So we are asking for a shipment to start after a month or two. So in such a case, the seller has the right to sell the goods at the time of actual sale, what has been agreed with the buyer. So if we have said that the material has to be shipped in a particular month, it has to be shipped around that time only and cannot be shipped earlier. The goods shall correspond to the description. So whatever description, whatever specifications have been given, the goods have to be exactly as per that. If there are any samples which have been furnished, then goods have to be as per the sample and they have to be without any defect. So that means that it should not be deficient in quality. Goods should be reasonably fit for the purpose. So if you are selling a car, then it has to fulfill all the functions and all the utilities that a car is normally supposed to fulfill without any deficiency. If it is a perishable or eatable stuff, then this material should be free from dirt, insects, and the goods have to be reasonably fresh. Basically, the goods or material have to be appropriate for use. So that means they have to be of the appropriate quality. What are the implied warranties? So the buyer shall enjoy peaceful possession of the goods. That means once the ownership has been transferred, there is no interference. When you also say peaceful possession, means there is no incessant quality problem or operational problem with this goods or material. Goods to be free from any charge or encumbrances. That means there should be no claim or no liability on these goods from any other party. The seller must warn the buyer about probable danger in case of inherent dangerous goods. So, things like statutory warning. Now, it's a very, very far-fetched case here. We are talking of warning on cigarettes and liquor, etc. But generally, if you look at any goods, you buy any electrical goods, they will tell you that you are not supposed to use it in a wet area, or there will be specific instructions on how the goods have to be utilized to prevent any unpleasant experience or accidents. Coming to the performance of the contract, so for achieving smooth and trouble-free performance of a contract, some of the points which need to be taken care of both by the buyer and the seller, they are the payment and delivery. They should be concurrent conditions. What do we mean by that? Once the seller has received the payment, he has to be in a position to deliver or give the possession of the goods to the buyer. Likewise, once the goods have been delivered to the buyer, the buyer also has to make the payment, or as the the terms and conditions which have been decided, the delivery conditions, they have to be taken care of, they need to be complied with, including, you know, if there are any requests for full delivery or part delivery, like for example, in industry, you place a single contract, but you want the material to be delivered in, partial deliveries at certain intervals. Also, in terms of payment, the buyer has this responsibility of making payment as per the sale contract. Whatever credit terms have been agreed, those have to be respected. In case of equipment, etc., the installation, commissioning, including the performance of the equipment, whatever has been promised as the performance guaranteed from the equipment, that has to be delivered, and transfer of titles. So the clear title has to be transferred to the buyer of the goods. So let's look at some of the rules relating to delivery or regarding delivery. So goods need to be delivered at the agreed place as per the contract. Now, whenever you enter into a contract, you are clearly stating that where the goods will be delivered. It could be that the goods will be delivered up to your nominated transporter, or they may be delivered at your door. That means at the premises that you have mentioned. So that has to be fulfilled. Goods are to be delivered also as per the agreed time. Like we talked about the agreement to sale or agreement for sale, where we have asked for a deferred delivery. We have asked for a shipment after 2 months. And we have said that we want the delivery, or the goods to reach us by a certain time. So the seller has to ensure that they are delivered as per the time requested. Goods are to be delivered in quantity as agreed, whether it is part quantity or full quantity. If it is insisted that full quantity needs to be delivered, the seller needs to ensure this. Unless otherwise agreed, all the expenses, for making the goods deliverable have to be borne by the seller. So, for example, there is an equipment that you have ordered, and for safe delivery of this equipment, you need to pack it in a certain way. Now, all these costs have to be borne by the seller. And generally, what a seller would do is they would factor all this cost while they are doing the costing, and probably it would be included in the price. But even if some unforeseen expenses do come up, then they have to be borne by the seller. We come to transfer of property. So the transfer of property has to be considered in three ways. What are those? So one is the transfer of the property of the goods. So whatever qualities we have stated in the goods, so those have to be transferred. So here basically we are talking of quality. Then we are talking of the physical delivery. That means then these goods have to reach the buyer, the customer. It has to be in the customer's possession. And thirdly, the passing of the guarantee and warranties to take care of the risk. So after you have delivered the goods, you have to make sure that it performs as per the promise, as per the specifications, and that is where the guarantee and the warranty comes in. Just take the example of a car. The company will say that this particular car will give you a certain mileage, a certain performance. The performance can be in terms of acceleration, in terms of the load it can carry. So you have to make sure that when the car is actually manufactured, it meets those requirements. That means it contains all the property which have been stated in the property of the goods. Second, you have to physically deliver it. So a car dealer will actually deliver the goods after you have made the payment. After registration of the vehicle, he will hand it over to you. And then he gives you a guarantee and warranties to take care of the risk. So if there is any manufacturing defect within a reasonable period of time, which can range from like 1 year to 2 years, depending on the company, they will take care of any failures. So you find that there is unnatural failure of any component, it will be covered by this. However, just a word of caution, most of these guarantees and warranties do not cover certain conditions. For example, if you are using the equipment for a purpose which is not intended for. For example, you are using it for racing or you meet with an accident, then these guarantees and warranties do not stand, because the guarantees and warranties are for performance of the equipment under normal circumstances, and they are covering the risk of any manufacturing or design defects, but they do not cover the risk due to any negligence or rashness on the part of the consumer or the customer. So, on completion of all these, the transfer of title takes place simultaneously, which is the end of the contract sale. So, when the property of the goods have been transferred, when the physical goods have been transferred, and when the guarantee and warranties have been passed on to the customer or the buyer, then the contract of sale would come to an end. One point here is, until the payments have been made also. So, we always say that a sale is complete only when you have received the payment. So, as a seller, the sale is not complete simply by these three activities. There is a fourth activity called payment or receivables. So, now let's come to the rights and duties of a buyer and a seller. So, rights of the buyers include the examination of the goods. Generally, any buyer, when they receive the goods, they do a quality inspection. Now, in an industry, very rarely, goods are accepted without inspection. But this is one of the right of the buyer. In case they find that the goods are defective, then they can return the rejected goods. They can also refuse to take delivery. I mean, I have faced a situation where we have received certain chemicals in tankers and we found the tanker was leaking. And taking this tanker inside the factory premises, even for unloading purpose, would pose a threat, and it could create a dangerous situation, because even the chemical is actually pouring on the road. So we refuse to unload this tanker and we send the tanker back. Also, because there was loss of material, so you don't sometimes, it's difficult to assess what is the actual amount of loss which the tanker has suffered. There could be a case where you suspect that the material you have received is contaminated, and this is a very harsh reality in India, that in tankers, etc., en route, from the manufacturer that they come to the buyer, the driver and the cleaner can, collude with some antisocial elements, where they remove some of the good material, they may add something into the material, which is similar in nature, and at times we get to detect these things at the receiving end. So, practice that we always used to follow is, even for tanker materials or anything, we draw a sample, we test in the lab. If we find the product to be of acceptable quality, only then the tanker is taken to the unloading bay. Also, because we store this material in underground tanks which have huge capacities, and multiple tanker loads are actually being stored in a single tank. So, if by mistake we accept a tanker which is contaminated and we unload this material without testing, then the entire material which is stored inside the tank can get contaminated. So, this is an important part of the process, and it's also a right of the buyer. So, also to examine and accept the goods and to send the rejected goods back to the seller and intimate him accordingly. In some cases, it could be that you cannot just send back the goods to the seller. You have to intimate him. They may want an inspection at your premises, and only if they are satisfied that the goods do not meet the quality requirement, they will ask you to send it back. So, one has to be careful that while, yes, we say that it is the right to send back rejected goods, the rejection has to be accepted by the seller, only then you can send it back. Rights of the unpaid seller. So, while the rights of the unpaid sellers include a lien on the goods for a period when he is in possession of them, he can stop the goods in transit in case of the buyer becoming insolvent, or he does have the right to resell the goods as limited by the Act. So, if the goods have not been paid for, he has a claim on those goods, he can recover those goods, provided the buyer has not become insolvent and he is not gone under liquidation. He can stop further delivery of goods and he can divert the goods and sell it to some other party. So, these are some of the rights that a unpaid seller has. We now come to the duration of transit. What actually constitutes transit? So, we'll try to understand this in a little more depth. The goods are deemed to be in transit till the buyer takes delivery. So, from the time you dispatch the goods from your premises, the seller premises, till the time the buyer takes delivery, that means he accepts the good, the goods are supposed to be in transit. The destination of the goods has to be as per the contract and as specified by the buyer. So, if they have said that we want the goods at a particular city, at a particular site of yours, then, and if this is as per the contracted conditions, then you need to ensure this. If a buyer rejects the goods, the transit is not deemed to be an end. So, example I gave you of the tanker. We did not accept the tanker because it was leaking, or let's say we did not accept the tanker because it is contaminated. So, in that case, the transit is not complete. So, this is for clarity. If buyer takes delivery before their arrival at the designated destination, the transit comes to an end. Now, it so happens, you know, that you have asked for door delivery. Now, you are the buyer. You have asked for door delivery of the goods. The seller has, consigned the goods to a transporter, and the goods are, being delivered to a transporter office, and from there, another vehicle is going to carry these goods to your site or the place where you are going to consume the goods. Now, this particular material is under stock out, and you are under tremendous pressure. So, you may actually offer to the transporter to pick up the goods through your own means from the transporter's godown. So, if that happens, what it means is that the transit comes to the end when you have collected the goods from the transporter's warehouse. So, although your original terms of sale were door delivery, where the transporter is supposed to deliver the goods right up to your doorsteps, here you on your own have gone and collected the goods from the transporter's warehouse, and hence the transit comes to an end at the transporter warehouse, which means the subsequent journey from the transporter warehouse to your own premises, the liability belongs to you. Breach of contract. So, the actions which can be taken in case of a breach of contract includes filing a legal suit by the seller on the buyer. Also, he can sue the buyer for damages of non-acceptance, or damages for part delivery, or interest for delayed payments, if any, and the damages for breach of warranty. We have found the many times this kind of cases happen for no rhyme or reason. You have an agreement to sale, or you have dispatched the material and the buyer does not take delivery, or he takes the delivery but he takes it after 2-3 days. Could be because the material is lying in the open, it may have suffered damage, there can be pilferage, there can be theft. So, these all amount to breach of contract, because if you have delivered the goods as per the specifications and description requested by the buyer, and you have delivered it as per the delivery date requested by the buyer, he is bound to take it. And if he doesn't accept this delivery, then it's a breach from the buyer side. And in such a case, the damages can be claimed by the seller from the buyer. Also of interest is this portion, interest for delayed payments. Very few companies would actually do this, but I know of companies which do charge penal interest for delayed payments. So also if the payments are delayed for more than say 2 times or 3 times, then generally these companies switch to advance payment. So these are the actions which are available to the seller in case of a breach of a contract. Now we come to the various Incoterms. We have already covered these Incoterms in the global supply chain, but we will again try to understand what are these Incoterms. They are generally used in global trade, but it's not necessary that they are only used in global trade. We are using it very frequently even in domestic trade. So you have terms like FOR, which means free on rail. Although we don't have railways anymore, or at least for most goods we don't use the railways, but what it means is that if we are sending it by road transport, then we are delivering the material to the nominated transporter of the buyer. You have free on board. Now free on board is only true in case of sea shipments, or it can be even in case of air shipment, where you ensure that the material is put on the aircraft or on a vessel, on a seagoing vessel. So that would be free on board. So the stage at which the responsibility of the seller ceases or ends is denoted by the rail or board, which is ship, in the above terms. And then you have the CNF terms, which means cost and freight is paid by the seller, the insurance is borne by the buyer. We have already covered this in global supply chain, but I will just repeat here. So what it means is that in case of FOR and FOB, the liability of the seller is only till the material is put on a vessel or put on a truck. In CNF, the liability is up to the destination port. So, for example, Mumbai is the destination port. Liability of your seller is only till the material reaches the Mumbai port, and thereafter, all responsibilities, all liabilities, including custom clearance and transportation, inland transport from the port to your premises, is the buyer's responsibility. CIF contracts. So, CIF means the seller has to take care of the insurance as well. We saw in case of CNF, it is cost and freight. Now here, it means cost, insurance and freight. So all the expenses are borne by the seller up to the point. So here again, CIF would mean if we say Mumbai port, then the freight insurance is paid up to Mumbai port, and thereafter the responsibility gets transferred to the buyer. Here, the transfer of ownership happens at the port up to which the CIF terms are applied. And same is the case even in case of CNF terms. So if they say it's Mumbai port, then transfer of ownership actually happens at Mumbai port. So anything happens to the consignment prior to this or up to this point is the responsibility of the seller. And if any incident or accident or any losses happen after this point, which is let's say the Mumbai port, that is the buyer's responsibility. So here the property of goods passes to the buyer as soon as the documents are delivered to them. So the ownership is transferred to the buyer. The buyer cannot refuse the document and ask for actual goods, because in international trade, the documents which are sent to the bank, the moment you get the document, irrespective of whether the consignment has reached the destination port or not, the ownership has been transferred. Also, you know, the vendor cannot withdraw the documents and tender the goods. That means, you know, he cannot say that I will physically give you delivery of the goods, and he does not send the document through the bank, etc. So, CIF contract is actually symbolic of transfer of documents alone, and here the transfer of ownership happens through the transfer of document and not the physical transfer of goods, which in case of domestic transactions, we have seen that when you actually receive the goods, either at a nominated carrier or, you know, at your premises, so then the transfer of ownership takes place. So, this is a slight subtle difference here. So, with that, we come to the end of this chapter. Thank you.